This is Jordan Seculo. In the latest case of presidential harassment, President Trump beats it back both Maryland and D.C. in federal court with decisive victories.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Yes, you heard that right, folks. In every case, the president does not have to rely on the Supreme Court ultimately for victory. Even though it's clear from every analyst looking at it that district courts have erred, and that courts of appeals sometimes err as well, and that ultimately the president will be victorious. This was a case where the Fourth Circuit said, Maryland and D.C., you have no standing to bring this case. This is not even an appropriate venue. We are here to solve cases and real controversies in the federal courts. You have no remedy. You haven't even provided a remedy to an injury which you can't explain, and they even said that you couldn't explain it in federal court. Let me explain to you what we're talking about here. This was a case. It's the latest move. Again, this is part of the presidential harassment. There's another one of these cases that's been brought also in the D.C. Courts, federal courts, by Democrat members of Congress. I assume it will be treated in a similar manner. So this is a case that involves the Emoluments Clause. So what is the Emoluments Clause? Well, take you back to civics class. You may not have even covered it there, even in college. Maybe if you did a graduate degree or PhD in the Constitution, in constitutional law, you would have covered this. But again, pretty briefly, because the Supreme Court's never weighed in on it. So if even in law school, you're not going to see definitive Supreme Court opinions on this. But let me read to you what Maryland and D.C. alleged and got a district court judge to buy into that President Trump was in violation of. And by the way, this is a win for his private legal team representing President Trump here. This is from Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. So why do we have this Emoluments Clause? Well, we have it because Benjamin Franklin accepted a snuffbox festooned with 408 diamonds from the King of France while he was ambassador. John Jay accepted a horse from the King of Spain. So they put that clause into the Constitution to get the states to ratify it, and it's never come up again in court. I mean, it's been kind of clear. It's a gift. It's again, it's not that you can't be a businessman and then run for office and win and still you don't have to close all of your businesses. And the courts were very clear here. I mean, this was a, again, unanimous victory by the president. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. My dad, who's on his way to Washington, D.C., and should be landing there soon, was calling us from the air on this victory, will be joining us. So Jay Sekulow, chief counsel of the ACLJ and a senior counsel to President Trump as well, will be joining us. A quick statement that came from him, the decision states that there was no legal standing to bring this lawsuit in the first place. This is the latest effort at presidential harassment, and it has been dismissed with prejudice. That means you cannot bring the case back up, and called it, quote, a complete victory at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals against the District of Columbia and the state of Maryland. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Presidential harassment. This continues, folks. They are using clauses in the Constitution that have not been litigated, that the Supreme Court has not weighed in on, to try and drag the president in through discovery. We'll talk about all that different aspects of this, why it is an important victory, and why it can set a precedent for further victories for the president in fighting back against this harassment, trying to distract from his job as commander-in-chief, which we know it's not doing. He's got very competent legal team handling these matters for him. Taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, but it is a decisive victory for the president against these out-of-control liberal attorneys general in D.C. and Maryland. Decisive victory against presidential harassment. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Say that the president has won this major victory against presidential harassment by out-of-control liberal attorneys general in this matter, and from Maryland and the District of Columbia, and who brought this lawsuit trying this novel approach from the Constitution in Article 1 on the Emoluments Clause. It really wasn't about the emoluments. It wasn't about shutting down the Trump Hotel. Here was the key, and it came from the writ of two separate opinions. One was a writ of mandamus shutting down discovery. And this is what it stops. This victory stops dozens of subpoenas to federal government agencies and President Trump's, oh, here's the kicker, private business entities for financial records related to the DC hotel. See, it's always about getting financial records from President Trump's private entities. They didn't really care if they won or lost this case if they could get to the point of getting discovery. So what happened? Well, President Trump's legal team immediately appealed that part, and they got the Fourth Circuit to put a stop to it. That's the writ of mandamus. No discovery with prejudice. That means you cannot, you know, we're not going to go through this again. You're not going to bring this challenge again. Of course, they could appeal this to a full en banc panel. They could try to do that, the Fourth Circuit. They could try to appeal it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's never weighed in. The Fourth Circuit was unanimous here in the case. Let me read to you a couple of different portions of the opinion for President Trump. And this is, again, a major victory in a case against presidential harassment, which this president has faced at really an unprecedented level. And these out-of-control district court judges who are granting these kind of actions. Thank goodness here the Fourth Circuit, because of excellent legal work from President Trump's legal team, has stepped in and said, no, you are out, you erred in judgment, you out-of-control district court judge, trying to side with the Maryland and D.C., who could not even state what the injury was or what the relief would be from that injury. Here, page 30, this comes from the opinion, the writ of mandamus opinion. Writ of mandamus is basically just a court order ordering a government agency to do something or stop doing something. So in this case, it was stop the discovery, stop the subpoenas for documents, both from government agencies and President Trump's private business financial records. Page 30 from the unanimous opinion. Moreover, the likelihood that injunction barring the president from receiving money from the hotel would not cause government officials to cease patronizing the hotel demonstrates a lack of redressability. independently barring a finding of standing. The deficiency was remarkably manifested at oral argument when counsel for the District of Columbia and Maryland, upon being questioned, was repeatedly unable to articulate the terms of the injunction that the district and Maryland were seeking to redress the alleged violations. They couldn't even figure out what they wanted, because really all they wanted was the discovery portion. They didn't actually care about the injunction. They didn't care about the hotel operating. They didn't even care about the president benefiting from the hotel operating. They wanted the documents, the discovery of the Trump financial records. That's what they wanted to go after. That's why it's presidential harassment. They find a liberal district court judge to go along with it, and it takes the Fourth Circuit stepping in to say absolutely not. They even go so far as to saying, when plaintiffs before a court are unable to specify the relief they seek, one must wonder why they came to the court for relief in the first place. That was page 30. Page 35 to 36. The district in Maryland's interest in enforcing the emoluments clauses is so attenuated and abstract that their prosecution of this case readily provokes the question of whether this action against the president is an appropriate use of the courts. See, presidential harassment, which the courts were created to resolve real cases and controversies between the parties. In any event, for the reasons given, we grant the president's petition for a writ of mandamus and taking jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. 1292B, hold that the district and Maryland do not have Article 3 standing to pursue their claims against the president. This, again, a major victory for President Trump. And again, I think that it also talks about how the judge at the district court level seriously erred in judgment in allowing this to even move forward. So, again, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I want to also open it up. If you got questions about what the emoluments clause is, if you're saying, okay, Jordan, I get you're saying president's harassment, what are you actually talking about? Because this is not something that's covered a lot in the civics class. It's not going to be covered a lot even at a college level or at a master's level. It may not even be covered if you went to law school, because there haven't been any cases on it. This is novel, as the court says in its opinion. Again, novel harassment, any way possible. And they couldn't even put into words what they wanted, because they couldn't just tell the courts, well, we really just want the financial documents of the president. And then, we don't actually care about the case. And that's why the court said, we're created for real cases and controversies. That is not what you brought against the president of the United States here. So we'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Larry in Indiana on line one. Larry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Hey, my question concerning this recent decision today is whether or not this decision has broader implications concerning the
So we dropped Larry. I think what he was getting at was the president's tax returns. Let me say, I think that one will ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court. You know, that's just my opinion there. And I believe that because you've got this provision on the Ways and Means Committee, Than, which says that it is pretty generic that they can just request anyone's tax returns. But the way it's been interpreted is that there has to be a reason behind it. There has to be a reason for why. You can't just request tax returns because you want to see them, because they could do that to any American. That would be harassment of Americans, whether they're the president or whether they're a private citizen. So the provision has been interpreted to say there must be for cause. There must be some kind of investigation going on. There must be some kind of judicial action going on, not just we want to see them because it says we can see them.
Yeah, it's got to be for a legitimate legislative purpose, like getting access to a certain tax returns might have demonstrated that the IRS was targeting conservatives. Jordan, that was a way that it had been used in the past, or maybe there's a legislative fix that you need those tax returns for. I agree with you that this case probably won't directly impact, but Jordan, I do think some of the logic actually fits with it. I mean, the whole reason the Emoluments Clause exists is so that you make sure that an elected office is not beholden to a foreign foreign government. You can't use it for a political purpose. This rule inside the Ways and Means Committee exists for the same reason. It gives them access to tax returns for legitimate legislative purposes, but not for political purposes. So while it might be a little bit different argument as it winds its way through the courts, and I agree with you, probably ultimately to the Supreme Court, I think some of the same rationale might apply when they say, look, the reason you have this power inside of a committee is for a reason, a legislative reason, not for political harassment. So, Jordan, I could see some of the same analysis occurring as that case moves up.
Yeah, let's go back to the phones again, 1-800-684-3110, because I think everybody's seeing this in the context of it's really not about shutting down hotels or getting the president to divest all of his interest in the Trump corporation and the business that he has set up. And we elected this businessman to be our president while he had the businesses going on. That this is about getting documents, about getting the discovery. That's what the key was here. They wanted financial records from the Trump organization. They didn't really care about getting the injunction. That's why the court said this isn't a real case or controversy. And let me explain what that means. You're harassing someone to try to get documents because you have no other way of doing it. Let's go to the phones. Karen in New York on line one. Karen, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say that Governor Cuomo just signed a bill regarding his personal income taxes, President Trump. What's that to stop him from subpoenaing our personal income taxes?
Well, okay, so this is what the law signed. It was it's specific to his New York state tax returns, so not his federal tax returns. And what it allows is that that New York officials could release tax returns only of public officials. So they were clear there to not include you like private individuals, but public officials that have been requested by congressional tax-related committees that have cited specified and legitimate legislative purpose in seeking them. I still think, again, as my dad said, he's quoted in the article on this, that this is more presidential harassment, and it will be responded to as appropriate. So I think expect legal action there as well. But even in that legislation, Than, that involves state taxes in New York, they were careful there to say that there had to be this legitimate legislative purpose. That's lacking in a lot of the federal in the federal requests right now from the Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah, probably better tailored in that one, Jordan. But look, I do think it's an example of the same thing. I think the state of New York, the governor of New York in this case, knew that Congress was going to lose its challenge in this. So this was sort of setting up the next stage to move on to the next harassment. So in many ways, it's the same tactic. It's just getting out ahead of their next law.
Yeah, and like Than said, Congress is the same emoluments case against President Trump in D.C. courts right now. Likely this Fourth Circuit opinion will put a into that case. We'll quash that out as well. We come back. My dad will be joining us. He just landed in Washington, D.C. He just got off the plane. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. The president with a victory here against two states with harassment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Major victory by President Trump fighting back against presidential harassment by his legal team. My dad, who is one of the senior attorneys for our president, is joining us now, just landed in Washington, D.C., is joining us by phone. Dad, you were getting this information to us while you were in the air on the way to D.C., but a major victory for the president here.
Well, this is a huge victory. Number one, these emoluments cases were just a case of presidential harassment. We had the District of Columbia and the Maryland and the state of Maryland going after the president and his business enterprises and doing it aggressively and making all these allegations of, illegal profiteering, so to speak. And the Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit in a unanimous decision said they don't even have the right to be in court in the first place,
no.
That there was no cognizable claim for them to be in court on. And the court was very direct and actually very specific as to what was at play here and what was at stake. And the court said that this is not a real case in controversy. And by the way, the emoluments clause is something that's in the Constitution, but it hasn't ever been litigated until, as the court said, until January of 2017 when President Trump was sworn into office. So it just shows you the nature of this ongoing presidential harassment, but our legal team fought back. The Department of Justice did as well, and we've had a really great victory. And the case has been dismissed with prejudice, which means while they may appeal it to the Supreme Court, they're not going to be able to restart the case in the district court based on the Fourth Circuit decision.
And this was a district court judge who was slammed by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Unbelievably.
On page 20, the federal judge who refused to dismiss this case, the panel in the Fourth Circuit said he erred so clearly. And at one point, the appellate judges chastised the district court for, quote, relying on its belief that it was unquestionably correct and therefore that there existed no substantial ground for difference of opinion. And the appeals court noted that writs of mandamus requested by an individual like the president are rarely given, but accused a lower court judge of issuing a ruling that was, quote, not guided by sound legal principles, but by whim. That is like the definition of harassment. And what we've talked about to our audience is that this was not about shutting down the hotel, preventing the president from financially benefiting. They wanted the records. That's what they really wanted. It was the harassment on getting Trump financial records.
That's all this is. At the end of the day, that's what this was. And that's what the attempt was. Now, fortunately here, the Fourth Circuit shut it down. But you're exactly correct. And what the Court of Appeals said to the district court judge, which you just read, which is so critical here, that in fact, that not only was there no basis for what the judge did, but that he ignored the arguments that were put forward by the president. But there's another line in the opinion where they say that when we press an oral argument, the District of Columbia in Maryland, when pressed an oral argument to say, what is the nature of the relief you want? What should the injunction say? They said, the court said, the D.C. and Maryland could not give us what that order would even look like.
Yeah.
And when you can't do that, the court said, you have no business being in court in the first place.
No, I mean, the exact quote is that the district, that it was clear during oral argument when counsel for the district, that's D.C. and Maryland, upon being questioned, repeatedly unable to articulate the terms of the injunction, that the district of Maryland were seeking to redress the alleged violations. Because, Dad, they never wanted that. They wanted the document. They wanted the discovery. It was all about document and harassment.
That's all it was. But I cannot understate the significance of how big this victory is. I'm going to be on with Sean Hannity on his radio broadcast this afternoon and also on TV tonight discussing it. But it's a huge victory and a very, very significant as to where it goes from here.
And Democrat members of Congress have a similar suit in the D.C. courts right now. Do you think this will be dismissed based off this Fourth Circuit opinion?
Well, we're certainly going to argue that. And I mean, this idea that, you know, because it's, again, what's their standing? What's their basis of bringing the lawsuit?
Yep.
What's the basis for them to be in court? And I think those issues, by the way, that's a threshold issue. Can you be in court in the first place? And the answer here was no, you cannot.
Yeah.
And I think the same should hold true without question in the District of Columbia. Had the same thing in the Second Circuit in New York, where it has some success. So, again, I think it's a very, very important development. But this is why we have to fight back case by case, issue by issue. And every day, you know, there's something new that's being sprung on the president.
Yeah.
But we're responding with our legal team. You're part of that team.
Hey, Dad, if you
have to do
here. If your phone cut out for a second, again, you just landed in Washington, D.C. You're joining us by phone, probably from the car, heading to our offices there. Let me ask you this, because we got a caller before you were on, asked about that New York law signed by Governor Cuomo about the state taxes that they would release. You were quoted very similarly that you'll respond accordingly. Is that one heading to court?
Well, we don't know yet, because here's what's happened. Chairman Neal of the Ways and Means Committee said he's not going to use the New York law. So we're looking at what the appropriate action might be there, but they don't think they're going to use that law. And I think we're already in court in Washington, D.C. The Department defending, the Treasury Department will be intervening in that action on behalf of the president in his individual capacity, since these are his tax returns. But then you've got the state of California saying that before you can appear on a ballot, you have to release your tax returns, which, by the way, the only part of that is that's not what the Constitution of the United States.
No.
So these are extra-constitutional, unconstitutional acts taken by the states purely for harassment. We will win these cases.
All right. We're taking phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Dad, we have a couple minutes left in this segment. But we are trying to explain it to people that not to get hung up on the emoluments part, but to focus on the harassment. I think you just went through it. So you got the New York governor. And then the Congress is saying, wait, I don't even know if we want to utilize this because it gets us in more legal issues. And then you got California trying to put new standards on how to get on the ballot. So it's not that, you don't just have to be 35 and a natural born citizen anymore. It's that, you have to release your tax returns. And by the way, those states are allowed to run the elections. They don't come up with the qualifications for office of president of the United States. That's in the Constitution. But again, all cases of harassment, because it does force the president and his legal team that you're overseeing to go to court, and this time all the way to the Fourth Circuit because of this errant district court judge who let this drag on for a year and a half.
I think that's right. And look, I think a lot of these cases are – I think you'll see a flurry of activity at the Supreme Court probably in a year or less on some of these cases. That may well be where they go, although – I think, for instance, on the California case, I think we're going to win it even at the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah.
I do not believe the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, I may be wrong, if I am, we'll take it to the Supreme Court, is going to say that the state of California can add an additional burden onto the qualifications to be on the ballot for a federal office. That's federal supremacy. It's the Constitution itself. It would be the states usurping the authority of the Constitution. The courts have consistently said since Marbury versus Madison, that's unconstitutional.
All right. That is my dad, Jay Sekulow, chief counsel for the ACLJ, a senior attorney for President Trump, joining us just as he landed in Washington, D.C. Dad, thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Second half hour coming up of Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are busy, but we will start taking your calls, your questions about this matter. I'll read this quote for you from the opinion. When plaintiffs before a court are unable to specify the relief they seek, one must wonder why they came to the court for relief in the first place. I can answer it. To harass the president of the United States, to force him into a year and a half long legal battle. As my dad said, the first case on the emoluments clause, since it was in the Constitution, began in 2017 when President Trump was inaugurated. Don't forget, ACLJ July is a matching challenge month. Whatever you're able to donate is doubled. So double the impact of your donation. Donate today at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back for our second half hour.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live, the second half hour of the broadcast. Let me reset the stage for you if you're just joining us. President Trump, major victory today in federal court, in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, against what was presidential harassment. Straight and simple. Presidential harassment. You had a case on the Emoluments Clause. What is that? Article 1 of the Constitution, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, except of any present emolument, so kind of a gift of money, office or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. So you had, for the first time ever, this litigated. Maryland and D.C., their attorneys general, decided that the president was in violation of that because of the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. So they went to federal court, and they found a district court judge who's had this case going at the, again, trial-level stage since 2017, and ultimately ordered discovery. So exactly what those attorneys general wanted for Maryland and D.C. Democrats, because it would relate to President Trump's and the Trump business's financial records. It wasn't actually about getting an injunction or any kind of relief. So the Fourth Circuit came in unanimously today and said, listen, the likelihood that an injunction barring the president from receiving money from the hotel would not cause government officials to cease patronizing the hotel demonstrates a lack of redressability, independently barring a finding of standing. The deficiency was remarkably manifested in oral argument when counsel, so the Democrats, for D.C. and Maryland, upon being questioned, were repeatedly unable to articulate the terms of the injunction that the city and state were seeking to redress the alleged violation. When plaintiffs before a court are unable to specify the relief they seek, one must wonder why they came to court for relief in the first place. We know why they came to court, Than. They came to court to harass the president and hope to get their hands on some documents they would not otherwise be able to receive.
It's pretty remarkable legal smackdown, really, Jordan. I mean, look, I put it in layman's terms for everyone listening. The court really said, look, there's no harm being done here. We've asked you repeatedly, what harm is being done here? What part of the Emoluments Clause has been triggered? What are you here for? They could not answer the question. And so the court outright asked them, well, why are you here? And I think we've answered that pretty sufficiently today. They had a political motive. And, Jordan, I would just put this out there for everyone's consideration. This is far from the first time this has happened. There's now a long line of these efforts that were ultimately losing endeavors that have been engaged by the political opponents of President Trump here in Washington, D.C. But each time, Jordan, there's another one that they simply move on to. And quite frankly, we talked a little bit about the New York law. I think that's what this is. They saw these two cases pending on the federal level, including the one that's being brought by Congress that your dad spoke to just a few minutes ago. I think they saw that they were doomed. They did not want this issue to die. And so New York moved ahead with the state law to get ahead of those losses. It's just harassment. I think they knew the loss was coming. And quite frankly, Jordan, I think the fact that they were unprepared to answer that question, I think it gives away. They knew this was a loss. They were simply looking to score political points.
Yeah, they wanted the discovery aspect. I want to go to Harry Hutchinson quickly. We can get into this more when we come back from our first break. We're going to start taking your phone calls as well, again, at 1-800-684-3110. We've opened up a couple more lines, so 1-800-684-3110 if you want to discuss this presidential harassment. But really a smackdown, as Than said, by the Fourth Circuit on the trial judge as well, the district court judge, saying, quote, he erred so clearly and that it was not based on sound legal principles but a whim. And yet this harassment went on since 2017.
Essentially, the Court of Appeals suggested that the trial court lacks basic legal analysis in terms of his opinion and in terms of his ruling. In essence, the Fourth Circuit threw the district court judge under the legal bus. That's where he belongs. That's where this case belongs. It's simply a case of legal harassment.
We come back, take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, this is a matching challenge month, the month of July. Whatever you're able to donate to the ACLJ, your donation is doubled. It's a great time to financially support the American Center for Law and Justice at ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secchio Live as we break down the latest victory against presidential harassment. Unfortunately, this is a president, because he is shaking things up in Washington, continuing to drain the swamp, continuing to fight back against the deep state. He is facing this unprecedented level of harassment, of cases that are so novel, the courts are saying that district court judges are issuing opinions based on a whim. A whim. That's great when your legal system, when you're president of the United States and you got judges at the federal court level issuing opinions based on a whim. That's how the Fourth Circuit interpreted what the district court did here. I want to go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. If you want to talk to us on the air, that's 1-800-684-3110. Cliff is calling in from Virginia online too. Cliff, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Thanks for holding.
Thanks, not a problem. Hey, is there anything that can be done to these judges that are allowing these cases to go through? It seemed like there should be some kind of recourse that can be taken.
I mean, ultimately, the recourse for most of this, especially when you're talking about a case, this is the first time a case like this has ever been brought, is the next level up in the judicial system. This judge really got his head handed to him, if you will, by the Fourth Circuit. And they said, not only did you clearly err in judgment, you didn't base your judgment on any sound legal reasoning, but on a whim. And let me go to Harry Hutchinson here, because Harry, this case was dismissed with prejudice, and they went to the step further. They issued a writ of mandamus, which they said is unusual that they would issue for the party at hand here, this being the President of the United States, circuit court level, preventing the discovery. But that's how out of line the district court was in finding that Maryland and D.C. could even proceed. That's all that he found. That's what the Fourth Circuit is saying was so absurd, is that just finding that D.C. and Maryland could proceed with this case, Harry, was such an error in judgment.
I think that's correct. So first, if you look at the Maryland and D.C. Attorneys Generals, they first offered a deficient legal theory. Number two, the judge accepted this deficient legal theory. Number three, the parties failed to articulate any level of redress. So this is a basic common sense question. So what relief are you seeking? They could not answer that particular question. So we should also note that the emoluments clause has never been applied to a president, and it has never been the basis of litigation. And it's clear beyond question that the parties in this case lack standing. So, in essence, at every single level, with respect to every single issue, the parties that brought this case struck out. They should have struck out because there was no legal basis for bringing this case in the first place. So, essentially, the Court of Appeals issued a writ of mandamus, basically an order forbidding these two plaintiffs from seeking additional documents from the president. That is extraordinary, and it is highly justified. These parties lack standing. In essence, as I think you correctly point out, Jordan, it was simply harassment on steroids by the litigants.
Yes, and then, you know, this plays out. The president's got to defend it all the way through the district court level. And then you get to the appeals court. That's great that you get these victories, but see, the harassment continues. Congress, Democrats in Congress have brought a similar lawsuit in D.C. Now, Fourth Circuit should be able to, this decision should bear some relevance to that case as well. But Than, you bring up a good point, which is that it's not about impeaching judges who make bad decisions at the district court level about the early stages of a case and allowing them to proceed. It's about getting good judicial nominees confirmed. And sometimes we only focus on the Supreme Court and we forget the appeals court, like here today, where it was unanimous, and even the district court level. But there was another major confirmation. And what does that bring up to? Five? Is it four or five at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals by the Trump administration?
Yeah, it's actually seven, Jordan.
Seven.
Yesterday, Daniel Bress became the seventh judge to be confirmed to the Ninth Circuit Court. Actually, the balance on that court, Jordan, is within four judges. It's 16 to 12. Now, I know we don't like to talk about this in terms of partisan balance, but 16 were nominated by either Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. Now 12 between George W. Bush and Donald Trump. So a 16 to 12 balance. But I'm glad you bring up this point because I think there's always a temptation to talk about recourse for a judge that makes a bad decision. No. The recourse, Jordan, is confirming better judges, and that opportunity is open to us right now. Daniel Bress, who was confirmed yesterday, he is the 42nd Circuit Court judge confirmed since President Trump took office. There's been more than 120 confirmed between the district and the circuit levels. Jordan, there's another vacancy on the Ninth Circuit. It's also no accident that the three judges that decided this case at the Fourth Circuit were nominated by George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, and Donald Trump. So all of that to say, Jordan, there's a lot of vacancies still in the federal court. The proper way to continue to get better rulings that are more consistent with the Constitution is to nominate and confirm in rapid order judges that will adhere to the Constitution. That has been on a fast track. This case is evidence of it, and we need to keep it moving.
All right, folks, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I mean, Harry, when you go through this case, this was a the Fourth Circuit judges believe this is the first time a case on the Emoluments Clause was brought since the adoption of the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely.
The first time, and it's President Trump and one of the first states to join the Union and the District of Columbia, whose liberal attorneys general decide to bring this case. They find a friendly district court judge who lets this drag on for a year and a half, but ultimately they walk away with their hands in the air. They don't. They, as these Fourth Circuit said, they could not even articulate what they wanted from this case because they couldn't tell the judge or the Fourth Circuit, we just want the discovery.
Yes, so the only thing that I'm disappointed in with respect to the Fourth Circuit opinion, which is entirely justified, is that they should have issued instructions for legal remediation. In other words, the attorneys who brought this case ought to be required to attend continuing legal education because these types of cases should not be brought. Secondly, I think the Fourth Circuit should recommend that these attorneys be sanctioned for bringing a frivolous case to the court and wasting the court's time. These cases are essentially nonsense in terms of legal theory, and they are simply designed to harass and to force the president to litigate on several fronts simultaneously.
Let's continue to take phone calls. The phone lines are open for you. This idea of presidential harassment, but also how important it is, one, for Republicans to keep the Senate in 2020, to reelect President Trump, if you care about getting good judges. Because as Stan said, when you've got 16 Democrat appointees on the Ninth Circuit and now up to 12 Republican appointees on the Ninth Circuit, a few years from now, we might not be talking about the Ninth Circuit the same way that it's referred to. It might not be the kind of same. And even today, you might draw a three-judge panel that's very different than what you would have drawn, let's say, even 4 years ago. So let's go right back to the phones. Matt has got a question about the New York law. Matt, calling from Georgia on line one. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, you're doing a great job. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
My question is, they said to get Trump's that they would open public officials' records. And he's not a New York State public official, but a federal official. Yeah. Would that make any...
Well, the way the New York law was written, and now Congress is saying they're not necessarily going to use this provision that New York has opened up, because it's not for New York to release. It's not to say that New York legislatures or New York legislative committees can release tax returns of public officials. It's that special congressional committees. But what actually passed New York was state returns of those in federal, state, and local elected or higher level public offices, along with the entities those people control. So their businesses as well, or that they have a large stakes in. So what the existing law has prohibited releases like that to Congress of state taxes. So what they're saying here in New York is that if Congress tries to get someone's tax returns and they're a citizen of New York, that we will give you their tax returns if you have a legitimate legislative purpose and the Treasury Department has said no to you. So technically, the Ways and Means Committee could take action under this new law now that's been signed by Governor Cuomo in New York. They haven't yet, but the Treasury Department has already declined their request. That's now in court. So it seems to me that they feel like it's better to fight it out in court on a federal issue amongst the different branches of government than it is trying to bring in a state legislature trying to give over their taxpayers information as well. But again, it's just another move at presidential harassment. We're taking your phone calls. Again, the president responding to this, but as you see, he's got now this very competent legal team in place handling a number of these cases. We only bring them up on the broadcast really to educate you about what the president is really facing on a daily basis that the news doesn't cover. And it's not covering this huge victory by him today and smackdown of Maryland and D.C. because it's a huge loss for liberals. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. We've opened up lines for you.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. At latest, I mean, and again, you're not going to see this elsewhere right now. And my dad is going to be on Sean Hannity's radio broadcast later on today and television broadcast. So ultimately, it will be broadcast there. This victory by President Trump in federal court at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, remember, 99% of cases, 99.9, that's the Court of Appeals are the final courts. The Supreme Court only takes a small, you know, less than 1% of the cases in the country in federal court. And the court here said that Maryland and D.C., you have no standing to be here. You can't even articulate what you want out of this, what kind of injunction you'd want, because they didn't actually want an injunction. They wanted discovery, which was granted to them by an out-of-control district court judge who also got smacked down by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I like when the judges at on the higher courts stand up to these liberal, out-of-control district court judges, trial court judges. They said, quote, that he erred so clearly and chastised him for, quote, relying on its belief that it was unquestionably correct and therefore that there existed no substantial ground for difference of opinion. They noted that their writ of mandamus stopping the discovery and letting this case move forward. See, this was about it wasn't like an ultimate judgment on whether or not the president was violating the Emoluments Clause. This was the Fourth Circuit unanimously saying, you can't even let this case move forward. This is not an actual case or controversy for the federal courts. So they issued the writ of mandamus saying, stop all of this. You know, stop your subpoenas that went out to federal agencies, that went out to the Trump businesses. You don't have to, you know, shutting all of this down. Because the ruling at the district court level was, quote, not guided by sound legal principles, but by whim. I mean, Harry, you talk about this re-education for these attorneys, but they find these judges who will also go to this. I mean, I know just from being on this team how frustrating this particular case was at the district court level, because the judge there, as the Fourth Circuit noted, had this belief that they were 100% correct. There could be no difference of opinion, as the Fourth Circuit said. And even though there were no legal principles backing that, and as they said, it was guided by whim. So these attorneys for D.C. and Maryland were also finding judges to go along with and play their game.
You're absolutely correct. So district courts have become increasingly polarized and politicized. Why? Because they're searching for power which would enable so-called elites to trump the will of the people. So President Trump was duly elected by the American people pursuant to the U.S. Constitution. Notwithstanding that, of course, lawyers in particular jurisdictions, generally democratic jurisdictions, are increasingly disappointed with the judgment of the American people. So attorney generals for these jurisdictions are bringing an increasing number of frivolous suits, and they have found friendly judges. And so one of the things to keep in mind here is that there's a constant search for friendly district court judges. And so what we need are, as you correctly point out, the nomination and confirmation of new judges, particularly at the Court of Appeals, who are prepared to smack down judges who engage in arbitrary, capricious, and in some cases, invidious legal reasoning designed to advance not the law, not the Constitution, but their political agenda. Judges are not appointed as politicians. They are not. They should not simply rule based on who prevails. They should rule based on the law. And I think the law in this particular case is clear. There is no justification for this particular case. The only argument for bringing this case is to A, harass the president, and B, obtain additional documents with which to harass the president in the future.
Let's go back to the phones. Penny in New York on line two. Penny, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, should voters be more aware in local, smaller elections, not to get these judges voted in?
So these are judges. So these are federal judges. These are nominated by the president, and they're confirmed. They don't usually get as much attention at the district court level. But increasingly, as Harry said, we should be paying attention because they are the triers of facts. So they put the facts together that ultimately appear before the appeals courts. And the appeals courts in 99.9% of cases are the courts of last resort. The Supreme Court of the United States only handles less than 1% of the cases. So these again, they play a very important role in putting all the facts together. But you don't elect district court judges. Now, you do elect members of Congress, specifically senators, who suggest, especially at the district court level, Than, who make the suggestions to fill at the district court level. So they don't get as much attention. Sometimes they get like mass confirmed, like there'll be like a dozen of them confirmed at one time and before the Senate Judiciary Committee, or not even have hearings. So we rarely see a contentious district court nomination. It does happen occasionally. Again, this is it's about who you elect as president and who you elect as in the U.S. Senate. Now, I'm not saying, by the way, your local elections are just as important, because you do in many states have the ability to elect judges, and sometimes it's even partisan manner, and your state courts are very important, your local courts are very important. So I'm not taking away from that, but then when it comes to these district courts that we're talking about, federal district courts, oftentimes it is the U.S. senators who oversee those states where those district courts sit, just put forward the names. So it's very important to know who is actually being put forward.
Yeah, Jordan, a lot of times we get a question that if you're from a state like California, maybe you shouldn't pay that much attention to what your senators are doing on district court judges because you're not going to get a vote for them in the end. I very much disagree with that, and I very much agree with what you just said, because we call it the blue slip process here in Washington, D.C. That's really just a fancy way of saying that a president does consult with home state senators for generally a panel of judges that then the White House will nominate from. So the input from a home state senator is still very important, but I would just boil it down to this, Jordan. You need to get both district court and circuit level judges that are going to adhere to the Constitution. This administration has been able to get more than 120 between those two levels confirmed through the United States Senate, 42 on the circuit level and 9 inside the Ninth Circuit. That has made a dramatic shift on the federal bench. So yes, pay attention to your local judicial elections, but on the federal level, you need a president who will nominate good judges. You need a Senate who will confirm them. And even inside blue or purple states, Jordan, you need senators that will listen to voters and sort of react to political pressure to put forward a panel of nominees that a president can make a good selection from.
Kathy on Facebook, you're absolutely right, Dan. To close with this, that these frivolous lawsuits are simply costing the American people in the end. And you're absolutely right. It's politically divisive. It does cost taxpayers money. The DOJ gets involved in defending it. You got Maryland taxpayers paying for their case, D.C. taxpayers paying for the case, so local taxes, federal taxes going in. You got the president having to pay for it, and ultimately it is presidential harassment that divides the country, and it's wrong for these states to be utilizing the legal processes to do that. And again, President Trump's legal team, which many of us are part of in a private capacity, separate from our work at the ACLJ, fighting back and with a big win today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes